Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I am culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'm very pleased to be joined today by Lou Diamond Phillips. Now, you guys all know who Lou Diamond Phillips is. This is a big guest for the show. I'm excited to have him on. Star of La Bamba, Stand and Deliver, Courage Under Fire, Steven Soderbergh's Che, the second part of Che, I think the better part of Che. Don't tell anyone I said that. And more recently, The Chair Company, which I thought was the best show on TV last year. We're not going to talk about The Chair Company, but I loved it. I just want you to know that.
We can talk about anything you want to talk about. I happen to love The Chair Company.
All right. Well,
we're starting the second season. Starting the second season in August. So.
Oh, awesome.
I'm not sure when it'll be back, but we'll start filming in late summer.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Maybe we can discuss it a bit. But we are here today to talk about Keep Quiet, which is a new movie. It's coming. It's going to be in theaters and on demand soon. And it's premiering at DIFF. It's going to be at the Dallas International Film Festival. It's big, big. You're going to be here in town. It's very exciting. Everyone is very excited for this. I'm excited to talk to you about it because I've now watched it. I've watched it twice now here in my house at home. And it is it's a really interesting example of something we've seen a lot of recently, which we might think of as, I don't know, reservation noir or like a kind of a nouveau Native American cinema. There's some really interesting stuff going on here. I'm curious, so what attracted you to the script, not just to act in it, but also to serve as the EP? You know, a lot of actors will put their name on lots of movies as executive producer, and it's kind of a vanity credit. And you do not do that. This is, I believe, your first film, your first feature film as executive producer. Is that?
That's a good question. I think I've gotten credit on a few things that maybe did not see the light of day. It's not something I've done a lot, as you said, but for projects that needed a little extra oomph, you know, it's something that I was willing to do. And like you said, I don't take it as a vanity moniker. I take it when I think that I can have an actual impact on the creative process or even the budgetary process, you know, anything, you know, that helps the film get made. The film came to me, first of all, from an introduction by my good friend Megan Griffith, who directed me in The Night Stalker, which she wrote and directed. But she also did an episode of Longmire. As a favor, I did an episode of Graves for her while she was shooting in New Mexico, concurrently with my Longmire schedule. But she introduced me to Vincent Grashaw and said, hey, this is a good buddy of mine through the festival circuit. And, you know, he is a stellar director and, you know, take a look at this script. And so obviously I'm predisposed to liking it because it's coming from somebody whose taste I admire quite a lot. And, I mean, literally, man, five pages in and I am hooked on the character because I know the guy. Anytime I can see myself delivering the lines, I know that it's like, okay, you know, I knew exactly what to do with this. I heard his voice. I saw him physically, and it just kept getting better as the story progressed. And as you said, it's very interesting because it is, you know, it's a bit of this, you know, native noir. I think I like that. I hadn't heard that before. I knew it was going to provide some opportunities for native actors, and there are not a lot of them out there. You know, as in opportunities, there are a lot more native actors today than there were back when I did Young Guns, you know? So I knew that I could help out with casting in that respect. But I also, as an executive producer, literally the first thing I did after I said yes to Vincent was bring on Marcus Red Thunder, because I really felt we needed a Native American technical advisor. And Marcus and I had become close during Longmire, where he was also our technical advisor. He's a very good friend of Craig Johnson, who wrote the Longmire mysteries. My character, Henry Standing Bear, is to a large part inspired by him and his, you know, laconicness and his, you know, sense, dry sense of humor. So Marcus and I became good friends, and the producers, Vincent and Kyle and a bunch of other people, Ron Nimrod, they were all very much in favor of bringing on an expert, basically, because, you know, we want, you know, whenever I represent the Native community, I want to get it right. I want to do it with respect and integrity and to honor that community, even when the subject matter is as tough as this. I brought on Marcus. He'll be in Dallas as well, by the way. I'm thrilled. He'll be part of our panel. And you know, his contributions were immensely valuable in helping to shape the film and how we went about it. Irene Bedard is also a very, very dear friend. And, you know, she had worked with me on Longmire. So I had recommended her for that role. You know, so, you know, once again, I had an active participation in the creative direction of the film.
Well, can I ask? Well, first, let's give folks the elevator pitch for the film, just so they know what we're discussing here, because it is I don't like to do this. I like to leave this up to the creatives, because they always have a better answer than me. I just regurgitate plot summary. But what's the elevator pitch for Keep Quiet? Yeah.
Short answer, man. Training day on the res. You know, it immediately, you know, you had Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke, you know, in Training Day. In this one, you've got me, and this time a younger female police officer who joins the tribal police force, Donna Nimrod. And she's wonderful, by the way, absolutely fantastic. And she joins at a time when not only is tensions regarding gang warfare on the res about to boil over. She joins at a time when some dark secrets are about to bubble up. So, you know, I mean, the film is fraught with tension, with, you know, a real kinetic threat throughout. And once again, a great expose of, policies and tactics and how, even though this is a very universal story, how it is very specific to the location. You know, to me, there's also echoes of Colors, you know, Sean Penn and Robert Duvall, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time, I also, you know, part of who I used as a touchstone for this character is, you know, Tommy Lee Jones in No Country for Old Men. You know, he's got that weariness, that cynicism. He's carrying, a pretty heavy burden, even as he has to, you know, very workmanlike go through and solving a crime.
Yeah, the comp that I had that came to my mind was Joe Carnahan's Narc. I don't know if you saw Narc, but that's another you know, movie that is very it's dark and it's intense, Narc. But there's a real heart to it as well. There's like
Jason Patrick. Yes.
Yeah. The Jason Patrick,
my buddy
Ray Liotta.
Jason Patrick, absolutely. Ray Liotta, fantastic film.
Yeah,
I think Jason's best work.
It's really good. It's out on 4K. People should check it out. All right. So now that folks know what the movie's about, I want to loop back to what you mentioned about Marcus Red Thunder. What were some of the things that he came in and when he was looking at the script was like, okay, we need to do it this way, or, you know, even on set, you know, when shooting was happening, he's like, this doesn't work. Let's do it this way, or this is something that you might want to tweak. How did that process work?
He came in. This is what I love about him too. He gets what the themes are, what the story's about, and then he makes the appropriate tweaks. He's not one of these guys who kind of comes in and just hits it with a chainsaw. He's very adept at seeing what you're trying to achieve, but also, you know, understanding the medium. You know, that it's not a documentary. That it's, you know, that it is a piece of fiction and has you know, certain story parameters that have to happen within, you know, within the storytelling process. It was his decision to not make it a specific reservation, you know, mainly because this is a universal issue. It could happen on any res, you know, anywhere, you know, in North America. As a matter of fact, the writer was a tribal cop in Canada, you know, and a white guy. And, you know, knowing that, you know, Marcus said, yeah, let's not make you native. Let's not make you. And I had this question, too, you know, because this has come up before. I don't claim anything that I'm not. I try to be as authentic as possible. And, you know, while I have represented, you know, some amazing communities in the past, whether it's Cheyenne in Longmire, and I got adopted into the Cheyenne Res, Lame Deer Reservation up in Montana, but also, you know, in Young Guns, you know, and got adopted into the Lakota Nation. So, but I've never claimed to be of that community. You know, I've always been able to represent them as an actor and as an ambassador to a certain extent. And so it was what I think was kind of brilliant in this respect was to make me an outsider, but married into it. And so therefore, you know, part of the community, but never, you know, 100%, you know, accepted, you know, and that creates an interesting dynamic, not only for the people that I'm policing, but, you know, for my own psyche, you know, and that overcompensation for wanting to do, you know, a really good job for the people I represent. I mean, it actually had, you know, incredible, I think, resonance throughout, you know, throughout the script, and also, you know, put me in a position to very authentically mentor, you know, Donna's character, you know, and say, hey, you know, these people, you know, this is, you know, this is something that you need to respect and you need to understand and you need to, you know, immerse yourself in, even though you're never going to be one of them. You know,
that tension of being kind of the eternal outsider is really apparent throughout the film. It is in some ways kind of the beating heart of your character. What did you draw from in your own life there where you were bringing that into the character, onto the screen?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you know, the first thing I think of is like you said, it's like the young Latino kid or, you know, even the African-American guy who, you know, who joins the police force and then wants to, you know, police their own, you know, neighborhood. All of a sudden now they are other, you know, they are not, you know, something about the uniform makes them not trusted, you know? And, the realization of that. And the funny thing is, you know, being of mixed heritage, you know, and being, I don't know, just very different my whole life. I was able to draw on that. What was interesting is growing up on Navy bases, for the most part, I was always accepted because there were so many other mixed race kids. It wasn't a big deal. But then, quite honestly, when I got to college in Dallas and then when I got to Hollywood, you know, I needed to be categorized. I needed to be put in a box. And in the 80s, you know, that was okay because I was the ambiguously brown and could play, you know, and represent, you know, whether it's the Latino community in La Bamba or Stand and Deliver or, you know, Native in Young Guns or The Dark Wind or anything like that, you know. And it was accepted, you know, by a majority of people. You know, there were some people who had issues with it, and I always tried to deal with that. But that hit my own personal history, you know, informed how this guy, you know, operates. And then I, you know, filtered that through my own father's military service, you know, and having played a bunch of cops in the past and having known this guy in real life. And not as a real life human being, but as a, you know, a representative of law enforcement or whatnot, you know, with people that I've, you know, that I've known in my time, it gave me his swagger, if you will, you know, it gave me that really strong personality that I think he leads with.
It comes through the screen. You can definitely, feel it. Can you talk a little bit about working with a few of the actors? I mean, Elisha Pratt. Am I getting all right? Good. Always like to check. He jumps off the screen. He is
that kid is a discovery, man. I mean, one of the things I look back throughout my career and I've had the opportunity to work with some young actors who then blow up and you know have a career. I mean, Matt Damon in Courage Under Fire. He was unknown at the time. You know, and I think Elisha is one of these kids who just, man, he just needed that role. And I sincerely hope this is his breakthrough. Many people, you know, including yourself, have you know, commented on the fact that you know, this kid is a revelation. And Vincent found him through the you know, auditioning process. Mm-hmm. I don't believe he'd ever had a speaking role before. Mm-hmm. You know, he was in Killers of the Flower Moon, as were a number of our cast people, but as background artists.
Right.
You know, it was shot in Oklahoma, so they got weeks and weeks of employment, which is fantastic. You know, but in this, we have a number of people who are getting their biggest role to date. And once again, that's one of the things that I'm incredibly proud of in saying that, yes, because I said yes, this movie gets made and those people have an opportunity, you know. We talked about it recently because, you know, the film is incredibly well received in Locarno and also Oldenburg, you know, both of mm-hmm. those film festivals. And you know, Elisha and I did an interview or two. And it's, we got to hang out a lot on set together, but we really only have a few scenes,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, because, you know, our two storylines are on a collision course, you know. But he it was really sweet, man, the fact that he said he would just hang and watch me and you know, learn a lot, you know, just by observation, which is exactly how I approached things when I was his age.
He is great. And like I said, I just, you know, and as you say, a new face, this is really an amazing performance from him. And there's an actor, an older face that comes up in this, Nick Stahl, who he had some troubles but he's back and he's acting, and he's also kind of terrifying in a different sort of way. He has a similarly striking, you know, face and appearance and visage, and but it's nice to see him back. I've always been a fan, and it was good to see him get back into the world of film. What was working with Nick Stahl like? I don't know.
First of all, Nick is fantastic. You know, I mean, he's a wonderful guy, man, and a consummate actor and a consummate pro as well. He was attached. He was attached before I joined.
He's worked with Vincent before, right? He's been in his previous film.
So obviously they had a fantastic working relationship, and you know, Vincent put him in this as well. I had never worked with him or met him, and you know what I got to say is that it you know, that this speaks to who Vincent is. You know what I'm saying? He is not swayed by other people's opinions or whatever the you know, scuttlebutt is out there, you know, that, you know, in this day and age may be true or maybe not true. You know, he doesn't judge. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and that makes him an incredibly honest storyteller. And he brought that sensibility to the filming of this. I mean, you know, he's not a bullshitter. He's, you know, he just really, I have such respect for how Vincent shaped this, and you know, he was the one who would, like, you know, tweak scenes, you know, on the day or, you know, the night before or whatever, but also just, you know, how we shot something and whatnot. And on a very, very small budget, man, we did not have the luxury of, you know, six takes, eight takes, whatever, you know, 24 setups in a scene. You know, it was, you know, wham bam, thank you, man, get in there and get it done, you know. He came at it with such respect for the cast and got it right in the casting. You know what I'm saying? He never had to adjust somebody's performance. And what's interesting too is that he got it so right in the casting that a lot of, you know, first time performers or non performers, you know, really, really delivered. Mm-hmm.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real actor showcase. There's some great tense, you know, action sequences, but this is very much a movie about watching people perform. You mentioned not having a ton of money. This is a business, a showbiz podcast first and foremost. So I like to kind of dive into this. You mentioned, you know, attaching yourself helps with the budget a little bit, but what is raising money to get this movie made like? I mean, when you come on, is the film all right? Is the film a go, or is it still like maybe a go? Like, what was that process like?
I think it's a flashing green. You know what I mean? At the point where they came to me, it was a flashing green, and you know, you don't know whether or not. And there's been a situation in the past, and I'm proud to say that, you know, if I've said yes, suddenly an investor ponies up a bit more money, and you get an extra day or two, or you get, you know, another camera or whatever, you know, a better lighting package. I think that, you know. And once again, not to pat myself on the back, but, you know, all of a sudden I was like, okay, we've got, you know, a marketable name. At the very least, we can hope for a streaming deal or whatever, maybe get into some festivals, all of that, because it helps, you know. And when that performer, you know, matches the director's vision of the role and matches the investor's necessities when it comes to, you know, getting their money back, then, you know, then that's a symbiotic relationship. So we were able to move forward pretty quickly, but, you know, they hadn't actually set a start date, mm-hmm. you know, when I said yes, and we moved forward with that pretty quickly. And, you know, and I'll say, without, you know, too much, you know, I don't know, hubris, that you know, I turned down other work to do this one because I just knew this was special. You know, I had a couple of other things that I potentially could have done and would have paid me a bit more. But I knew that this was one of those roles that, you know, doesn't come along every day.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, it is really good. And it is kind of in line with some of the other stuff you've been doing. You mentioned Longmire. And I mentioned, yeah. You know, there is this kind of explosion of Native noir, whatever, Native American cinema that, or TV shows that, you know, have come up. There's Dark Winds, Reservation Dogs, who, by the way, I haven't even mentioned, but Lane Factor, the yeah. kid who plays Albert in this film, is so good, and he's so good on that show.
Yeah.
Is great. Then you have, you know, Taylor Sheridan stuff, Wind River, Yellowstone, that whole universe. What do you make of this? Why is this such a burgeoning genre right now? What is it that appeals to both filmmakers and audiences that this is like, hey, this is a new thing. We're all pretty into it.
That's a good question. I mean, and once again, here we go. Zahn McLaren, very, very dear friend of mm-hmm. mine, you know, is recurring on Longmire and then, you know, blows up, you know, yeah. when he gets Fargo. So once again, it's almost like I get to pass the torch and then watch them finish the marathon. It's interesting. I mean, Taylor Sheridan certainly has, you know, exploded the genre of the contemporary Western, mm-hmm. you know, although I will say, you know, much like, you know, without Young Guns, maybe Unforgiven doesn't get made, mm-hmm. you know. Without Longmire and the success that it had and Netflix picking it up, maybe Yellowstone doesn't, you know, get in the door. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it is this progression of sensibilities, because that's, you know, I mean, Hollywood is not original. Hollywood is, you know, a copycat. You know, so what's worked before? Oh, was that a success? You know, there almost has to be precedence for, you know, someone to take a heroic leap and green light something. And the fact that, you know, contemporary Westerns are working now, you know, whether it's, you know, Hell or High Water, you know, I think really kind of opened the door yeah. for Taylor, even though that wasn't, you know, a massive success. It was incredibly well received. Mm-hmm. And then Wind River. And as you said, it's a domino effect. But the fact that contemporary Westerns are now doing well, it's like, okay, what's the other side of the story, you know? And then you have someone like a Sterling Harjo who comes along, and I've often said you want to get these stories made, you know, you need that cat behind the camera, You know, you need your Luis Valdez who made, you know, La Bamba happen, and mm-hmm. American Pachuco, the legend of Luis Valdez, is also screening, you know, at the Dallas Film Festival. I was at Sundance helping to launch it. You need your creators, you need your writers, your directors, your producers who are going to tell specific stories that have universal reach. I mean, Ryan Coogler, you know.
Yeah.
That's what it is I think you have, you know, if you have a handful of powerhouses that are generating this, and I hate this art, it's not freaking content, it's art. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
If you have, you know, certain people who are, you know, making this happen, then you get a movement, you know? I mean, back in the day, you know, we thought, you know, with La Bamba and Stand and Deliver, you know, that all of a sudden there was going to be a wave of Latino film. It's, you know, that never materialized, you know, and things are happening now, you know, that where we're getting more specific, authentic storytelling that has universal appeal, you know, and I think fortunately, maybe you have executives who are recognizing that, you know. Why, and this is the thing too, I want to make sure that people know that Keep Quiet is not a niche film. Mm-hmm. You know, it really does have universal appeal. I mean, this, you know, it's happening on a reservation, but it could happen on any reservation. It could happen in East LA. It could happen in Chicago. You know, it could happen in Seattle with Asian gangs. You know, there is something about it that you know, crosses boundaries and cultural, you know, parameters that is universal, but it's also very, very specific in its lived details.
I've always loved that description of art. Art is at its most successful when it is it brings something specific to the universal, when it puts you in a place, but you know, that is still is something everybody can experience and appreciate. It's funny. I don't talk to a lot of actors on this show. I talk to mostly executives, like writers, directors. So I never am 100% sure what to ask a writer about their work, or I'm sorry, what to ask an actor about their work, because I don't understand. I understand writing. I understand directing, kind of, at least I understand the idea of it. You know, I kind of understand producing. Acting is like magic to me. I watch it happen on mm-hmm. screen and I like my eyes pop like a rabbit got pulled out of a hat. And I'm curious, what would you have people know about the art of acting? Like, what is a thing that you sit there and think about and like, this is what I'm doing. Here is what people need to understand about what I do and how I do it.
Wow. You know, there are months long college courses being taught on that particular subject. I think the thing that's interesting for me, and the thing, first of all, there has to be respect for the craft. It is a craft. You have to exercise it. You know, I wrote in a play of mine once that, you know, it's an action verb, just like writing, directing, dancing. They're all action verbs. You have to do it. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. So, there is that aspect of it where by training, by studying, by, constantly applying it, you will get better. But like you said, there is that intangible that is talent, that is, you know, the ability to do it without, I don't know, too much, you know, cerebral application. You know, a lot of people, you know, think about it, a lot of people study it, but doing it comes from someplace that, you know, is amorphous. And you know, they talk about chemistry, they talk about presence, they talk about, you know, star quality, all of those things, the it factor, that defies definition. You know it when you see it, and you know it when you have it. Yeah. And you just do it. The discipline comes in, you know, learning your lines and showing up on time and creating an atmosphere, not only for actors, but for directors. They create an atmosphere, an environment where somebody is safe to do their best work. And the funny thing is that when people watch films, I recall, you know, one of my very earliest writing credits was on a film called Trespasses that I rewrote. And with my mentor, Adam Rourke, we refilmed a lot of it. because the guy playing the lead was a rancher who saw Tender Mercies and said, "Hey, there's nothing to that. I can do that," you know. And what's ridiculous is that most people don't understand that the ability to do nothing and still command a screen is a massive task. Yeah. You know, when you get somebody who gets, you know, one or two lines because they invested in the film or whatever, and then try to hit their marks and say two words, it's the whole the magic trick of, you know, pulling the rabbit out of the hat about our job is that we have to make it look so easy that anybody can do it. And it is the exact opposite.
Yeah.
You know, it takes so much work, so much concentration, so much discipline to make it look that easy.
Okay. That's all right. I'm going to keep this. You mentioned working with a lot of non-actors on this film or a lot of first-time performers. Professionals. When you were working with them, how did you help them make it feel and look easy like that? What were some of the things that you brought to the set in terms of preparation, whatever, just to make them more comfortable and give them that that presence?
It's welcoming. You know, it's like I said, creating that atmosphere where they are not intimidated. They know that I'm their friend. They know that I'm there to make them look good, you know, and it's a respect for everyone. It's respect for the background artist. It's respect for the guy who's got two lines, you know? And so, yeah, I greet people when they come to the set. I hang out with them. I give them the high fives and the attaboys, you know? I've been in the situation where somebody, you know, blows the first take or two and it's like, "Hey, it's good, man. It's good. Don't worry about it. You know, here we go. Let's do this again. You know, you don't have to be perfect." I mean, it's literally, allowing somebody to be as good as they can be. And confidence, you know, confidence is a huge thing when you're performing and realizing that you're not being judged and that you're not going to get fired and that, you know, it's, that you're there for a reason, you know, and I've had people who have done that for me early on in my career, and I've had people who've done the opposite, and I know the effect it has on you.
Yeah.
You know, and so this, you know, between Vincent, between Donna, between and the producers and to be quite honest, a really scrappy small crew in Oklahoma, you know, everybody was pulling in the same direction. Everybody was, you know, wanting the best for the film, the best for every take, every scene, every day, you know. And, you know, we didn't have big trucks. We didn't have trailers. We didn't have, you know, we didn't have any of that stuff. It was very, very definitely the indie film experience. And if you come into that with an attitude, then nothing's going to work.
Yeah. All right. Let me, since you mentioned that, what's the difference between promoting a film like this, which is a little more indie, and promoting a big studio film or a big network TV or big streaming show? You know, what's the difference for you as you're out here trying to get folks to watch it? Because that is always the thing, right?
That's it. I mean, no. First of all, you know, we're doing this. It's getting access. It's getting, you know, it's getting the eyeballs on something. It's raising awareness, and you have few and far, you know, there are and far between opportunities on a film like this than, you know, the big budget Hollywood thing. The big budget Hollywood thing is going to have the press junket where they're going to, you know, rent out the Four Seasons for a day and bring in 100 journalists, you know, do the junket where, you know, virtual, you know, on camera, you know, interviews are going out to every major outlet across the country. You know, that's. I mean, you literally have to show up and do the footwork. You know, you got to hit the bricks, you know, for a film like this to get the word out. Whereas, you know, people are the studio system already has, you know, the machine in place, you know, to get those, you know, stories out and to get the awareness out. Not to mention the fact that, you know, the studio system and even, you know, quite honestly, you know, organizations you know, whether it's the Golden Globes or the Academy or, you know, the studios and the big films, you know, they want their next film as well. You know, a little film like this, are they going to be looking for Vincent Grayshaw's next film? I don't know. So, you know, some people will, obviously, but you know, the system will not be looking for it. You know, the system cannot wait for the Odyssey, you know, where it sold out, you know, 6 months ago, you know, on its first day. So not only do we not have that kind of access, we don't have that infrastructure to promote a film and to raise that awareness. So, you know, here I am talking to you. Here I am going to, you know, the Dallas International Film Festival. Sadly, I couldn't make it to Europe. I was working at the time for both of those. But it is, you know, it's artisanal and it's handcrafted. You know, it really takes the personal attention to get it out there. And it's done with love and it's done with, you know, with passion.
Yeah. I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked. If you think there's anything folks should know about Keep Quiet or, I don't know, the state of the film industry in general. What did we not discuss that we should have?
Oh, once again, we could have gone all afternoon. I believe that that Keep Quiet is going to have a groundswell. I really do. You know, every time you know people see it, the effect is the same. This is not one that people are meh about. You know, it speaks for itself. It's a wonderful film, and a murderer's row of talent. You know, in the cast, I'm so proud of everyone. But you know, it's the beginning of a very long journey. You know, I really hope to see it's coming out theatrically in July. So you know, everybody that I say, it's like, hey, tell a friend like you, see it twice. You know, for it to be successful and to make the most of its theatrical run before it, you know, hits streaming, which I don't know when that's going to happen. But I think July 10th is the release date. But, you know, it's building that awareness up now, you know, over the next 2.5 months, you know, because the industry is contracting, because, you know, there is such a wide chasm between the $200 million films and the little ones like ours, you know. There's a chasm between, you know, the talent, between, you know, the guys, you know, and gals who are, you know, $10 million a picture and you know, in the big franchises and all that other stuff. And then the working actors, you know, who were just trying to make a living, you know, I mean, the pay scale has gone off a cliff, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
They'll pay their A-list, you know, person $10, $20 million. And the next thing you know, everybody else is making Schedule F, which is a little bit, you know, over, you know, scale,
yeah.
You know, yeah. For big supporting roles and in television and in film is ridiculous. In television and in film, people who are known, you know, people who are names, I don't know if I can call them stars, but you know, people with names, you know, are struggling to get those roles because now there's 8 people with, you know, impressive resumes up for a single part. You know, it's getting tougher out there. So I look at opportunities like this, you know, with a lot of gratitude and just really grateful that we're getting our, you know, day in court.
And folks should see Keep Quiet when it's in theaters. This is a movie you want to hear. You want that good sound system. You want to hear the gunshots. There's a very Michael Mann heat quality to the, you know, to the shootouts, and but also just because you should see movies in theaters, because that's the best way to experience them, because you can focus on them instead of scrolling on your phone. Yeah. I'll get off my soapbox. Mr. Phillips, thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Sonny, thanks for the time, brother. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the support. Thank you.
My name is Sonny Bunch. I will be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.